right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Susnow.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in for another episode, conversation, show of the Inspire Possibility Show. And every week I invite different individuals to be my guests, to have a conversation with me, people that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who make a difference in our lives, people who simulate our thinking, people that actually enrich us. And fortunately, I've been blessed to meet a lot of these kind of people, and I don't know how they come to me. Sometimes there's a publicist that contacts me. Sometimes I hear about them from other guests that I have on my show. And there's a certain magic in it. And the person today that I have on my show is David Van Eyes. He's a clinical psychologist and former head of the psychology department at Sonoma State. He has several hobbies. He's a podcaster. He used to play guitar and recorder and piano and skydives. He windsurfs, mountain bikes, and he's done all these different kinds of things. And his latest thing, he's a podcaster. He has a podcast called Shrink Wrap Radio, and I happened to be his guest a week ago, and it was part of a getting to know each other where I would have him as my guest, and what's always and I would be a guest of his, and what's really always intrigued me is how these things occur, because there was somebody from L.A., Filippo Voltaglio, was a guest on my show, and he, after our interview, he says, you know, there's somebody you need to meet, and he had me suggested that I contact David, and I did. And what David and I talked about was this idea of how synchronicity occurs in our life. And I know David is an expert on this. He's talked about synchronicity. And I've always been curious the difference between synchronicity and intuition and coincidence, and all these things are kind of related. And so, David, did I do justice in interviewing you?
Introducing me? Yeah, I think so. And let's see, right. you left out the didgeridoo, the didgeridoo,
right.
And also hopping freight trains was something in my background that
I'm proud of. Woody Guthrie, Woody Guthrie, huh?
Yeah, Woody Guthrie by way of, all sorts of adventures and as you had interviewed Filippo Voltaglio, I had as well, and then he recommended us to each other, and so here we are. And by that kind of very interesting, mysterious, as you say, miraculous kind of principle that brings things to happen in surprising and delightful ways.
Mm-hmm. So, right? You know, I've read books on synchronicity, and it sounds, when you're reading it, it kind of makes sense and explains everything to you. But then sometimes you just don't walk away with anything. You say, oh, that was interesting. So what I'm hoping in our discussion is that you can help myself and our listeners to have a better understanding of what is synchronicity exactly. I mean, how do you see that?
Yeah, well, it's not really something that you can nail down in a very precise way. But I think we should say, for starters, that the term we owe to Carl Jung, the famous Swiss analyst and founder of Jungian psychology. And that's something I followed pretty closely, been very interested in. And Jung, who in his life was in contact with both Einstein, he had a number of dinners with Einstein, and
wow.
later another physicist by the name of Wolfgang Pauli. And so they discussed, you know, the nature of the universe, and Jung was particularly impressed by Einstein's ideas about the relativity of space and time. And this thing that we call synchronicity, Jung referred to it as an acausal connecting principle. So that's kind of an interesting notion right there, because it's a little paradoxical to talk about, you know, to say, okay, well, this is something that happens and things are connected, but not in the causal way that we're used to thinking of A causes B. And so
mm-hmm.
this requires an expanded conception of the universe. And I know you're really into that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So what did you just
You're all about. You're all
so
about.
Tell me what you just said again.
Yeah. I'll say what I just said again.
Yeah,
I don't know what
way.
I just said about
in a different way.
acausal connecting principle. In other words, it's not a Newtonian conception of the universe. You know, the kind of billiard ball image of the universe where one ball hits the other, and we can say, okay, that second ball moved because the first ball hit it. But
so there's an apparent.
What seems to be.
So there's like an apparent cause and effect. Yeah, okay.
Right. But one of the things that Jung and others since him have noted is that if there is any kind of connecting principle, I would say it's meaning. It's that things happen that are meaningfully related. And so I know at the top you were saying, well, what's the difference between coincidence and synchronicity? And so I think meaning would be part of that, that there are coincidences that are just coincidences, and we go kind of, isn't that interesting? And then there are very powerful coincidences that are too coincidental to be coincidental. In other words, it's really hard for us to buy that this was just a coincidence. And I used to put the question to my students when I was teaching, you know, where we would talk about parapsychology and sort of non-normal phenomena. And I would ask students, you know, how many of you have had the experience of, you know, of a something that just seemed too coincidental to be a coincidence? And a famous example is thinking about somebody with whom you haven't seen or talked to in a long time, and then the phone rings, and there they are on the phone.
Right.
Have you ever had that experience?
All the time.
Yeah, all the time. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Well,
I think it happens, you know, more and more. I'm finding it happening more and more. And
I'm not surprised to hear that from you, because I know that you're a daily meditator, and I know that you, as you know, beyond the meditation, that you have long been on the path of tracking your inner life, of getting in touch with as much as you can, and being attuned to your inner life. And in fact, there's research, both research and anecdotal reports, that suggest that people who do that, people who are meditators, people who track their dreams or engage in other sorts of practices like that, they tend to have more of these synchronistic experiences. And they begin to notice that another phenomenon that I've been extremely interested in is sometimes you will have runs of synchronicity. I've had a couple of periods in my life, one that lasted for a year or more, where there were all these meaningful synchronistic events that happened. So, and that was during a period in my life when I was particularly, I was tracking my dreams, I was meditating a lot, I was teaching, you know, I was teaching about that stuff, and so that was putting my you know, I was keeping a journal. All of that stuff puts you in that inner space, and then it's like the magic begins to open up.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying then there are phases where what you're saying there was this period where you had more synchronicity than normal, or just did
yeah,
it, you
yeah.
don't have as much now?
Yeah, I don't have as much now. And I think now I'm sort of more externally oriented in many ways, you know, with my podcast. You would think that, quotes, being retired from my university job, that I would just have a lot of time on my hands. But I seem to be one of those people who creates
right.
more for myself to do than I can keep up with, so that I still feel behind. And so
mm-hmm.
my podcast activity actually has turned into pretty much almost like a full-time job. And then I've got a market research business that I do, market research consulting. And between those two and being a grandparent and so on, there's just, my life is very full. But I'd like to tell you a couple stories, if we have time, about...
I'd like to hear them.
About, yeah.
But,
okay, well,
I'd like
one,
to hear them.
I'm going to call, yeah, I'm going to call this first one my grandfather's medicine hat. And... You know, speaking of the meaningful aspect, my grandfather was a very important male figure in my life. On my mother's side, he was actually a step-grandfather, but I only grew up with a stepfather, and somehow the step-grandfather was, he represented a lot of the sort of manly things. He took me hunting and taught me to shoot and took me fishing and had wonderful stories. So he's kind of an important psychic figure in my mind. And one of the things that I had of his after he died was an old Stetson hat that he used to wear. Somehow I got the idea, and it may have been from a movie, I'm not sure where, but I suddenly had this sort of vision in my mind of, I wanted to have a rattlesnake hat band for this hat. And I just became obsessed with this idea. I can kind of become obsessed with things. And they just kind of grab hold of me. And so I really wanted to do that. I just had such a vivid picture in my mind of it. And so I went on a quest to get a rattlesnake skin and was calling taxidermy shops and places like that.
Uh-huh.
And what I discovered is it's illegal in the state of California to have that stuff. Yeah, it's illegal
to
sell
have a
them or trade them.
Skin?
That's right. Yeah, that's illegal. And
wow.
That was surprising to me. I grew up, again, my grandparents had a cabin in the San Bernardino Mountains where I spent a lot of time. And a couple times I had encounters with the rattlesnake once I almost stepped on one. So I guess that's another part of this web of meaning, you know, is that memory of rattlesnakes in relation to my grandparents' mm-hmm. place. And they always warned me, never step over a log or a rock where you can't see
right.
to the other side. So, interestingly, at that period in my life, I decided to, quote, put it out to the universe. I'm a little skeptical of that idea often, like I'm not big into, you know, remember there was the whole thing about The Secret, and if you just put
right.
it out to the universe, you could have wealth
right.
and everything. And, you know,
exactly.
I'm a traditionally trained psychologist, so I'm a little skeptical of at
mm-hmm.
least extreme ends of that. But
right.
at the less extreme end, I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to see if I can draw a rattlesnake to me. And I sort of forgot about that. Probably months went by. I come home one day from some outing, and my wife tells me, oh, Cooch came by and dropped off a rattlesnake, and it's in a frozen rattlesnake, and it's in a bag in our freezer. I have to back up a moment and tell you that Cooch is the wife of one of my psychologist professor friends. We're both retired now. Cooch is a tarot card reader, longtime tarot card reader, mystic, fortune teller, master's in psychology person, woman, and a longtime participant in the Renaissance Fair, not just the one up here in Northern California, but all over the place. So Cooch was washing a flag that she hangs outside of her tent at the Renaissance Fair, and she had recently finished up her gig at the Renaissance Fair. Now, this flag has the famous symbol of the caduceus. Are you familiar with that symbol? It's the symbol that doctors use that shows two intertwined snakes going up a staff.
Right. Okay.
You've seen that. Most people have seen that.
Yes, I know what you're talking about.
And in that context, the snake is realized as a symbol of healing, actually, and of transformation, because the snake sheds its skin and is, in some sense, reborn. So that's kind of how it got that metaphorical association. So here's Cooch, this very mystical woman, and she's washing her her intertwining snakes flag that she hangs outside her tent. And she goes to take it out of the washer and put it into the dryer in their back porch washing machine. And there coiled up is a rattlesnake. So
in the dryer?
She calls her husband.
In
right
the dryer?
There in their laundry room. Not in the dryer, but on the floor. So calls her husband. They grab a shovel and they cut off the snake's head real quick. And then she remembers, oh, David. David had said something about a long time ago. He said he was looking for a rattlesnake skin. So she decides, you know, she remembers that. She puts it in her freezer, and then she drops it off one day when I'm not there. She drops it off at my house. And so then I had to learn, pardon me, I got to clear my throat. I had to learn to be my own taxidermist, to stake out, you know, to kind of cut that skin off the snake and to stake it out and to cure it. And then I wrapped it around I had no idea how to do this, but I found a piece of leather and I wrapped the snake skin around it. And I made this really cool headband for my grandfather's Stetson hat. And to me, it turned it into a kind of power hat. I'm a little nervous about claiming that, you know, out loud too much. I've worn it a few times in that context. But actually, my grandmother was a divine healer. And so both my grandparents came from that Pentecostal kind of tradition.
Wow.
And she prayed over me and dedicated me in that way. So there is one of my synchronicity stories.
So let me just backtrack once. That's a great story. I mean, it's fascinating. And at the same time,
I get energized telling it.
I can tell. But what I was thinking too, well, part of me wasn't totally there because I was thinking about what you said about the difference between synchronicity and coincidence is the meaning. And so would you say this is an example of you're giving this meaning, so it's now there's a synchronicity you were thinking about, you want to create this?
There was a whole lot of meaning all around it. I shared with you some of my associations with, you know, with my grandfather as an important male symbol in my life. As a healer, he and my grandmother. So there was a whole lot of meaning for me around it. The fact that I had been teaching a class on myth, dream, and symbol, teaching students to track their dreams, and every student had to do a creative project. This was sort of a creative project for me that I also then shared in one of those classes, and I'll wear that hat when you and I meet for lunch.
All right. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to make sure I get a good picture of it. Dr. Dave. Dr. Dave.
I'm not making this stuff up.
Yeah, no. I that is a totally fascinating story. But I do want to come back to this discussion before I hear another one, because I know I have a feeling you got a lot of them.
And, yeah, I got at least one more I'd love to squeeze in.
But I'm still this idea of, if it's not, how does it, I guess what I'm trying to understand is, if it's not, if there's, according to, I think you said Young said that, or who said it was Einstein, that there's not a causal relationship?
Well, it's Carl Jung who says that.
Yeah. So if there's not like a cause, let's say there's not like a cause and effect relationship, how does it show up then? I mean, is it just at random?
Well, see, that's
a big question.
That's part of the mystery, right? And as I say, we can't nail it down 100%, but mm-hmm. A lot of people have built theories around quantum physics, and we know that there are strange things happen in quantum physics where particles can influence each other at a distance in a non-causal, in a way that no direct causal connection can be made. And it's too far-fetched to say
that. But wouldn't be the causal.
My desire.
To get into quantum physics, wouldn't it be like the causal thing would be the intention, the thought? Wouldn't that be the cause?
Yeah,
causation?
Well, it's a different kind of way to talk about causation than we normally think of it. But yes, neither you nor I are a physicist. So I think for us, at best, that's kind of at the metaphor level, and we kind of have to take it with such primitive understanding as we have of quantum physics.
Yeah.
But it was something that Carl Jung and Pauli and Einstein took very seriously. But, in the ordinary course of things, it just seems unreasonable to say that, my desire for a hat band caused this snake to climb onto my friend's back porch and get itself killed,
right,
et cetera. That just feels like a very far stretch.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great story. And I know you have one that I'm curious about that you were telling me that it's going to take a whole bunch of time, and this is the one about how you and you're going to get people to finding your real father. And you said you told that on there's a link to that story that you can share.
Yeah, somebody else interviewed me in a longer format. It's on my website. If people will go to shrinkwrapradio.com. And rap is spelled just R-A-P, shrinkwrapradio.com, and look for episode number 308. There's a search bar there, and you can just type in 308, and that'll take you to it. There are over 540 podcast episodes there now, so my whole collection is there. Be sure to find that one. But if we have time, I have one more story that I think I could tell in a short format. If we've still got 5 minutes.
We have, we have
this
5 minutes.
Yeah, and we haven't used the word intuition. I think the word intuition is certainly somehow mixed in with the discussion.
I think I said that in the introduction. I think I said it is coincidence. I think I said intuition, coincidence, and synchronicity.
It's definitely part of that same package, I think. So back in the 70s, in the late 70s, I traded jobs. I was a professor at Sonoma State University. I traded jobs and houses with a professor at the University of New Hampshire. And we ended up trading for 2 years, and it was a great bunch of fun. While I was in New Hampshire, I decided to slay an old dragon. Because originally I had planned to be an engineer, an electrical engineer. In fact, I had a full scholarship in electrical engineering at the University of Pennsylvania. But I chickened out. I didn't feel like I really had the strong enough science background, even though they'd given me this scholarship. And I hadn't had any pre-calculus or anything. And I sat in on that first day of calculus, or first week. And it just scared the hell out of me. And I switched out of I dropped out of calculus, and I switched out of engineering. So now, 20, 30, 40 years, I don't know how many later, I'm at the University of New Hampshire, and I decide to take calculus just for the hell of it. I've already got a PhD, so it doesn't matter whether I pass or not. And they can't take my PhD away from me. So I ended up taking 2 semesters of calculus. I'm happy to report I got an A in both of them.
Whoa.
Unfortunately, it was a kindly old professor. I couldn't solve the problems as fast as the kids in the class could. And my head was spinning, and I had to, you know, I had to calm myself down and remind myself, hey, nobody has to know about this. But I was good at doing the homework. I was very tenacious about the homework and taking as much time as I needed to do it. So that's how I got those 2 A's. Also around the same time, and this, mind you, is in the late 70s, around 78, 79, I decided to take a course or two in computer programming. Now, there weren't even any personal computers yet, but I felt drawn to it. I had a good friend who was also in New Hampshire at the same time, and he was saying, David, why are you taking these courses? You should be working on furthering your psychology career. These things aren't going to help your psychology career. I couldn't give him a good explanation. I just felt intuitively drawn to it. Little did I know that when, after 2 years, I returned to my old job at Sonoma State University in California, there was a major financial crisis going on, and they were starting to lay off full tenured professors, which I was, and tenured is supposed to mean no danger of being laid off or fired. But that had already been breached. And my chair called me in and said that I was going to be laid off and I should start preparing myself for that. And I was in a panic because I already had kids. I had a wife and kids.
Right.
And what happened was layoff for me was averted when people realized that I had taken calculus and I had taken some computer programming. And they could move me into another department, and they moved me into the math and into computer science, where I taught intermediate algebra. They figured if this guy could do calculus, he can do algebra. And I started teaching computer programming, and I taught part-time in those 2 departments for 2 or 3 years, and it totally saved my bacon and my job. Now, how in the world, what was it that saw around that corner and prepared me against all logic, against my whole conscious understanding of things, to take the coursework and to later save my job?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that mind-blowing?
Well, yeah, it is. It is. You know, the thing that I'm saying, I just have a new book that came out, The Soul of Uncertainty. I know you did, and I appreciate that and appreciate you having me on your show. But what's interesting is when I was so used to signing my other book, Dancing on the River, when somebody first asked me to sign this new book, I didn't know what to say. And it takes you signing the book a certain number of times to finally you kind of tune into what you want to say with the book. And I started saying, enjoy this great mystery, this great adventure called life. And more and more, and even in my first book, Dancing on the River, about 8 principles navigating change, the last one was Embracing This Great Mystery. And I think more and more see life as this great mystery.
Yeah, let me jump in there. Somebody asked me, David, another psychologist that I had interviewed a number of times who's into brain science, and he said, why do you keep interviewing these Jungian people? Why are you so interested in Jungian psychology? I think of you as a scientific person. And I said, what I like about the psychology of Jung is that it leaves room for the mystery. So you and I are on the same page there, because I do believe that there's mystery that we are embedded in.
And I see with the mystery more and more, I see like a magic that is this idea of synchronicity, of coincidence. As you asked me, you know, if I had these experiences, you know, in my life. And I think you get to a certain point where that becomes your life. It's kind of you've embraced this great mystery, and that's the way your life is. So we're coming to an end here, and I'm gonna have to say goodbye.
I just want to say I applaud you for putting yourself on that path.
Well, thank you, thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. I mean, I'm totally excited, and I just want to thank you, David, for your contribution to being my guest and to your offering today, but just in terms of your commitment to being who you are, your tenacity, your determination, and your vision for
you
being you. Thank you, David Van Nuys, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.